Hey, this is Stacey Gatsoulias.
DC Lundberg.
Ryan Finkelstein.
Taylor Blake Ward.
Host of Locked On Yankees.
Locked On Mariners.
Locked On Mets.
Locked On Angels.
And you're listening to Locked On Braves.
Locked On Braves.
Locked On Braves.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome back to Locked On Braves, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, found across all of your favorite streaming platforms, covering all of your favorite sports teams across all of your favorite sports, whether that be basketball, MLB, NFL, college football, whatever the case may be. There's a good chance if you've got a favorite team and a favorite sport, there's a Locked On show for you, bringing you everything you need to know Monday through Friday, keeping you abreast and keeping you informed about what you need to fan the way you want to. Here on Locked On Braves today, we're going to continue our top 30 countdown, but before we get into that, there's a little bit of news coming up. Since we don't really know what's going on with when baseball is going to start, you see today the governor of Virginia declaring a stay-in-place order until June 10th. Got a lot of weirdness going on right now. There's going to be some small changes to Locked On Braves and to Locked On Podcast Network, aside from everybody but Locked On NFL, I believe. Starting next week, we're going to be going to back to regular off-season mode, essentially three shows a week. So don't be alarmed when you see that there's only three episodes a week. It's just more for content as we are rapidly approaching the end of what we have for content with no real beginning for baseball in sight. Trying to make sure that it's not just inundating you guys with shows, but giving you stuff that you actually want to listen to. So starting next week will be 3 days a week. Not sure what 3 days I'm going to do, probably Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but I'll let you guys know more when I figured it out on my end, and you guys can stick here with me. Still sticking through this entire horrible 2020 with you guys so far, but let's forget our problems, shall we? And in forgetting our problems, remember, Friday, we've finally cracked halfway through our top 30, so we're on the upswing now. We're getting towards the end. We're getting towards the players you guys are going to know about, the names that you guys have heard, some of the guys you saw in spring training. There's some good players to go through, and we're going to kick that off with our number 14th player, and this is a guy that you probably won't find this high on any of the more quote-unquote reputable lists as far as being this high up, but that's going to be Trey Harris, the outfielder out of Missouri, a 32nd round pick in 2018. That is amazing. This is a guy that when he came out of high school, got drafted in the 34th round, went to Missouri, played 4 years at Missouri, and got picked in the 32nd round. So for whatever reason, Trey, despite putting up good numbers in the SEC, just one of those guys that kind of fell through the cracks. Luckily for the Braves, they were able to scoop him up when they did. And he came out of the gates opening eyes and just wrecking everything. This is a guy that if you look at his stat lines do tell the story. Trey Harris can just hit. It doesn't matter where he's at. It doesn't matter what level or what age. Trey Harris just knows how to hit the ball, and he does it incredibly well. He doesn't look like your typical type of guy doing it. He's described himself as small and chunky. Those are his own words. At 5'8 and 215. He's probably heavier than that 215, too, by the way. Probably closer to 220, 225. Looks a lot like Chris Davis. Doesn't have that type of power, but what he does really well is know how to hit. And it's not necessarily super powerful, but Trey's a guy that's never been overmatched anywhere he's been. The lowest he's hit was in Mississippi when he hit 281. He's never had a WRC plus under 100 along any stops along the minor leagues. And while you'd expect that at Rome, you'd expect that at Danville because he's a guy coming out of the SEC that's already faced better competition than that. He handled some of the more difficult places to hit in the minor leagues, and he handled them extremely well, talking about Florida and Mississippi. So it's kind of hard to gauge the power numbers for Trey because he did spend a lot of time in Mississippi and a lot of time in Florida, which are two notorious parks for suppressing home run numbers. And really, those whole leagues are pretty bad at suppressing home run totals. But Last year, he had an excellent follow-up season. He's one of those guys that came out in 2018, did really, really well, came out last year and did even better. Last season, across 131 games, he spanned three levels. He rose three levels last year, which is nothing to sneeze at. Kind of gives you notice of just how good he was. And he killed it in 2018 coming back in. The Braves just wanted to start him back off at Rome for a little bit to kind of show that it was really on the level, that it wasn't an aberration. Well, he came out last year across 131 games across three levels, hit 16 homers, drove in 71 across three stops, really was pretty much the most reliable hitter everywhere that he went. Just looked like it was easy. Just a consistent ability to get base hits and to gap balls. You probably see those power numbers go up in Gwinnett, which is why I'm kind of hoping he'll get up into Gwinnett. His underlying numbers have all remained very consistent throughout every level, talking about his BABIPs, talking about his slugging, talking about his OBP, his strikeout rates, his walk rates. They've all remained very, very consistent. Now, his walkout rate did drop, his walk rate did drop in Double A, and his strikeout rate did jump above 20% for the first time in his pro career. But again, that's something that I would expect to happen the first time you go to stronger levels. We'll see what happens this year. He's not really a stolen base threat. He's not a speed guy, obviously, as you can tell by the body size. But he did steal, I want to say it was 8 or 9 last season. So in a full season, you're talking about double digits. He could flirt with double digits pretty regularly. He's definitely more of a left fielder than a right fielder, because while he does have really good... How do I want to word this? He's not a bad defender. He makes really good plays. He can cover ground really well despite some of his speed deficiencies. He takes good routes on the ball, but he doesn't have a great arm. So you technically could put him in right field, but really left field is going to be where he's going to spend the majority of his time. And it should be. It's not that he can't play defensively for right field. It's that you really don't want him trying to hose down runners out there. And that's not necessarily, you know, That's not a full stop. That's not a black mark on him. It does kind of increase the need for power a little bit. Although I think he's one of these guys that doesn't have to have a ton of power. He's going to be one of those exceptions to the power rule rather than the norm. As for that power, I mean, it's not a ton of it, but he should stay between 15 and 20 pretty consistently. I mean, he's shown that he hits the ball well. He knows where to hit it. And he just knows how to deal with the bat. I think a guy at 15 to 20, maybe a 22, 23 at his peak. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. And that defense, like I said, it gets labeled as average. I think he's a good defender. I think he doesn't have some of the range of some of the other guys, but he does get good jumps, and he's shown that he's able to make some pretty spectacular plays. He's no Justin Dean, who is one of his best friends, but you know, he's a good defender. He's not going to hurt you out there, I guess is the best way to say it. He's not a bad defender. He's just not a good defender. He's not a plus defender either, I guess we should say. He's probably going to start the season at Double A whenever the season gets underway. Although I would not be shocked to see the Braves be a little bit aggressive with him. He's 24 years old, so he's a little bit older for this prospect list. I wouldn't be shocked if they start him at Gwinnett. Especially if you're trying to gauge power numbers, Mississippi's going to be a hard place to do that at. He's already shown that he can hack it pretty much everywhere. There's not much that you're going to look to see from him growth-wise in Mississippi that you can't see in Gwinnett. Offensively, you're not looking for much growth offensively unless you're looking for his walk rate to kind of jump back up a little bit. His strikeout rate, while it was over 21% last year in Double A, that's not a bad rate at all. That's very sustainable. That's very in line with the rest of what he does. His WRC plus was up over 100. There's just not a lot that he needs to work on a Double A. I don't think he profiles as a star. Like, he's not a guy that I'm going to say, hey, this is a future all-star. Hey, this is a future top 20 player in the league or anything like that. But this is a big leaguer, guys. And I don't know if you guys understand how crazy it is to say you were drafted in the 32nd round and you're a big league, like that's your floor as a big league regular. Immediately outperformed everybody from that 2018 class, including Grayson Janista, picked in the second round, as we've already talked about. I wouldn't be surprised. Now, a lot of people ask me who's going to be the rookie that has the biggest impact on the Braves. They're usually talking about between Pache and Waters and so on and so forth. I would not be shocked if there were an injury to, say, an Ender Inciarte or a Marcelo Ozuna. I would not be shocked if this is the guy, if Trey Harris is the player who were called up. I would not be shocked at all. I think Acuna could always move to center field. You've got plenty of depth as far as the corner slots go. And if you call up Pache or Waters, you're going to have to start them because you're not going to call them up to sit them on the bench. Trey's a guy that I think they could start. Love his bat in pretty much any situation and know that they could have him on the bench as well and kind of float it around in platoon and kind of get some stuff out of it. I wouldn't be shocked if Trey Harris ends up reaching the major leagues before Drew Waters or Christian Pache. And aside from what he does on the field, he is a fantastic dude. You guys should definitely be following him on Twitter. He's a great guy to be around. All of his teammates love him. Him and Justin Dean, who we've interviewed on the Platinum Sombrero, they are hilarious. They are great friends. As far as what you can look at for him, kind of hard to come up with a comp because he is so small. He doesn't have the power of like a Chris Davis from Oakland. Otherwise, that would be the comp. I think I'm going to go with an Alex Gordon. Not quite defensively what Alex Gordon is, because Alex Gordon had a few years where he was probably the best defensive left fielder in baseball. But if you're looking about his offensive game or his overall game, I would avoid the four peak years. Basically, I would say Alex Gordon with a little bit less defense. He's not going to be a +9 defender. I don't think that would be a little bit crazy. But if you look at Alex Gordon offensively, I think that comps very well to what you're looking at for Trey Harris in the future. And I'm very excited about Trey. I love these stories, these guys that are super low picks, overlooked all their lives, told that they're not big enough for it. I love these stories when these guys come through, and Trey Harris is just going to be the next in a long line of them. But would you look at that? I've gone too long in the segment as per usual. When we come back from break, we're going to take a look at a starting pitcher, a name that you already know, but maybe you don't. What you might not know is just how close he's already been to making the major leagues. I'll tell you who it is coming up next right here on Locked On Braves. Do you hate stepping on the scale? I know I do. Maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. A company called Withings has produced the world's first smart scale, and they're still the best. In fact, Tom's Guide rated Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale for 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, willpower is key, but so is having the right tools. Withings smart scales are known for their durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Just step on and data from every weigh-in syncs automatically to the free app for iOS and Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Lots of smart scales don't even have the Wi-Fi option, and it means you have to keep your phone on you. But Withings Body Plus gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. The scale can support up to 8 users and even know who is who. So here's the deal, guys. You can get 25% off of Withings Body Plus right now at withings.com for a very limited time. Go to withings.com, that's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off the Body Plus body composition scale. That's Withings, withings.com/MLB to get 25% off the Body Plus body composition scale. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Locked On Braves. Continuing our top 30 countdown, Trey Harris, number 14. Number 13, as I mentioned before the break, a guy who's already been just this close to being up on the big league roster a few years ago. That is the starting pitcher, the big man, the veteran of the prospect list, Patrick Weigel, taken in the seventh round of the 2015 draft. Patrick Weigel has been in the system a good time now. I mean, it's not that long ago that we would consider 3-4 years not a ton of time being in a system, but the way that players are kind of moving up through the systems now and the way that we're looking at the Braves system now, that is a that seems like a time that's been forever for a guy like for an American, at least, for one of these non-16-year-old signings from the international signing classes. And if it weren't for Tommy John that he came down with in 2017, he would have already been called up. A lot of people might not know or might not remember. Back in 2017, when there was the race going on between Sean Newcomb and Lucas Sims about who would get called up first, there was another player in the mix, and that was Patrick Weigel. He had just kind of broken out a little bit, I guess you'd say, as a kind of a breakout. He really started to find himself as a guy that was taken in the seventh round. He was a college reliever. He wasn't even a starter in college. Braves saw something they liked, decided to give him a shot out of the gate, let him start. He was throwing mid to upper 90s, had a good slider to go along with it, was really, really doing well, was shutting a lot of people down, was motoring through the farm system. That 2016 team, that 2016 Rome team that ended up winning the championship there or whatever, Patrick Weigel was the best pitcher on that rotation, on a rotation that featured Mike Soroka and Colby Allard. I wanted to say, I can't remember who the other one was, but there was, needless to say, that rotation in Rome was a furiously good rotation, and Patrick was really the best pitcher of the bunch. So it was good to see him really starting to get some love and to start breaking out a little bit and have some people talking about him, and he was well on his way. Lucas got called up first, and then it was going to be... I believe it was Lucas that got called up first. Almost positive it was Lucas that got called up first. And then it was going to be Patrick Weigel. And then all of a sudden, when he got a couple starts into Gwinnett, all of a sudden his velocity was down from about 94, 95 down to about 87, 88. So he went to a doctor, finally got it looked at. Turns out that he needed Tommy John surgery. So that's kind of where he's been at. Basically, 2018 completely lost. When you have Tommy John surgery late in the year, that essentially means you miss the entire following season as well. So last season really was more of a get him back up to speed, kind of get him back used to throwing, see where he's at stuff-wise, velocity-wise, get him used to throwing again, and it did well. We'll see if they start to let loose the reins a little bit this year. This would be his second year removed from Tommy John. This is generally when you start to see the command kind of come back. So when you have Tommy John, when you're looking at the timeline for people to return, the velocity usually comes back basically after the first year, but you don't see the command start to come back until really the following season. So when you see him, he's still got really good velocity. He's routinely touching 97, 98. When we had him on for an interview with the Platinum Sombrero, there was some reports that he'd been hitting triple digits. I believe he confirmed with us on that episode, actually, that it was actually that they were gunning somebody else and not him, that it just got reported as him. But he routinely touches 97. He'll usually sit about 93, 94. He can dial it down if he's trying to be a little bit more controlling, but he'll usually sit about 93, 94. He has three off-speed pitches. As I mentioned, though, the slider is the best of his that group. The interesting thing about him, at 6'6", 240 with an upper 90s fastball, you'd figure he'd be a big strikeout guy. That's not really his game. He's not really a strikeout guy at all. I mean, he's got his moments, but... He spent more seasons with an under 9 strikeout per 9 rate than he has with above it. So it just might not be his thing. It could just be that some of the things we'll talk about here in a little bit might need to change a little bit. But really, that's one of the things that if you're pointing at something for Patrick to do to kind of separate himself a little bit, increasing the strikeout rate would definitely be one of them. The other thing is going to be keeping an eye on his stamina. He spent 2019 as more of a piggyback started with Wasker and Noah. He would usually come in after Wasker would throw 4 or 5 innings, and then Patrick would come in and throw 3 or 4 innings himself. The walk rate wasn't stellar before the Tommy John with him. That's going to be probably the biggest need for improvement if he wants to stay a starter. His walk rates routinely will float upper 3s to mid 4s. A couple times where he's been in the 5 range. But that's definitely one of the things he's going to have to work on to be a little bit more consistent with it. Like I said, originally drafted as a reliever, but they loved him and gave him a chance to start. This is a guy that's a prime bullpen candidate early. He got called up a couple times last year to be in the bullpen, but he never got into the game for some stupid reason. But this is a guy that the Braves would feel very confident in. When you saw him this spring, he was used exclusively as a reliever, and he did very well. I think he only had one outing where he kind of got knocked around a little bit. But he never looked overmatched. His stuff should play up in short stints. He's got an upper 90s fastball. He does a pretty good job of keeping balls in the ballparks. His homer rate can kind of spike a little bit. It's hard to tell last year, since that would be the first year using of Gwinnett using the juiced ball. So the fact that you didn't see him give up a ton this spring was a good sign. I don't think he's ever going to be a top of the rotation arm. Like he's not a Mike Soroka or a Max Fried or an Ian Anderson type where you're looking at him and you're saying this guy's a 1 or a 2. I don't even think he's going to be a 3. But I think if he's a starter, I think he's a very reliable bottom of the rotation guy. And these are guys that you need. Everybody poo-poos it and they're like, oh, well, he's not an ace. Well, not everybody's going to be an ace. That's not necessarily what you're looking for. He's certainly got the body type to be an innings eater. He's got good velocity. He stays within himself, too, which I think is very important for a pitcher that you're looking to be that solidifying that 4 or 5 in your rotation. It needs to be a guy that knows what his role is, knows what his job is, and knows how to go out there and do his thing. He has to be consistent. I think that's what Patrick does very well, and I think that's probably his best trait. For him to be a starter and to actually kind of make his own name and rise up these lists and rise up to the majors, it's all about improving his command. If he improves his command, he'll probably improve his strikeout rate as well. Those things are usually pretty closely correlated. If he can do that, then all of a sudden the outlook might look a little bit better, because you're not going to have a guy at the top of your rotation now who can't really strike anybody out. Those guys are normally going to top out at threes in your rotations. He really should have gotten his first crack in the big leagues last year. I don't know why he was called up and not put into games. To me, that was kind of bad call by Snicker on both times. But it's also because I genuinely like Patrick, and he's a great guy. I love talking to him on the show. I could be a little bit too biased in that. I do think that this year, whenever our next season of baseball is, I do think you will see him get some game action, even if it's just a couple times he's called up filling in for an injured reliever or whatever. It's tough. It's going to be tough for him to climb up in a crowded system like Atlanta, especially with all the pitchers he's got. I mean, we're going to go through this list in the coming days, and there's a ton of pitchers still in front of him. It's not that Patrick's bad. Quite the contrary. It's really just a mark of how insanely deep this system is when it comes to starting pitching in particular. But that being said, Patrick has the demeanor, he's got the work ethic, and he certainly got the track record to do it. This is a guy that was able to come through, and he was just a hop skip away from being in the majors and from being up there before it was either Newcomb or Sims. I want to say he was going to get called up before, I want to say Lucas got called up first, then it was going to be Weigel, and then it was going to be Newcomb. It could be the other way around. It could have been Newcomb, Weigel, and Sims. Either way, Weigel was going to be the second one called up in that whole setup until he had Tommy John. So I think there's still a good chance for Patrick to come out here, have a good season, and kind of remind everybody about why he was so close to the majors in the first place. Again, great guy. He's a little bit older at 25 now, but he's kind of made some inroads there. It's all about this year. You should see the command start to come back, and I know he's been working hard. Once you get to the point where if he can get that walk rate down a little bit, maybe trade some of those walks for some strikeouts, keep an eye on Patrick Weigel. This is a guy that is very unselfish, willing to do whatever those coaches need, and I think he's going to have a good future as a big leaguer. If you're looking for a comparison, I'm going to give you a starters comparison, because I know that's what Patrick wants to do, and I happen to think he'll be a starter somewhere, even if it's not Atlanta. Comparison-wise, I'd comp him to Michael Wacha, former St. Louis pitcher. I think that's a pretty decent one there. Hopefully he can end up being better than Wacha, but I think if you're talking about as a number four or five, or especially as a five, I think that's a great one to look at. You could say John Lackey if you just want to find somebody, if you want me to find somebody higher in for you, but I think Michael Wacha would be where I would be looking at that. All right, so that's all the time I have for today's show. Again, one more time, we are going to be starting next week. We are going to be switching to 3-day-a-week shows. Still going to be here with you through it all. We're just going to kind of scale it, as doing them every day gets a little bit rough when there's nothing to talk about, as you guys can tell. I want to thank you guys for being such good sports and keeping the downloads going. I know you guys are hurting for baseball. Appreciate everything you guys do. Appreciate you guys who reach out to me. Really do enjoy the interactions. If you guys have an idea, if you guys have something that you want me to talk about in particular, like I said, we're looking for content right now. If there's something that you want to talk about that I haven't discussed, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. You can go to the show's page on Twitter, Locked On_Braves, or you can go to my personal one at Dylan X Short, and you can let me know what's going on, and I promise you we'll get involved in the show. But thank you guys one more time for listening. We'll be back tomorrow right here on Locked On Braves.